We're gonna get this show on the road. Thank y'all for coming. I was walking my dog at 5:30 this morning. I was going, I don't really appreciate central heat or even indoor plumbing as much as I should. And now I'm appreciating the central heat a little bit too much. This room is never comfortable. yeah, really short meeting. We'll get out of here in a hurry. Let's see. First thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes. I think we all had those before the holidays. Are there any additional changes? Claude moves. Is there a second? Jim seconded. So there are no objections. The minutes are approved as written. Thank you very much. The updates are very short this week, this month, this quarter, whatever. I haven't done much. The Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board came to Savannah Riverside in October to review Savannah Riverside programs, and out of that, two of the programs you're going to hear this afternoon on L Basin and H Canyon. They presented them at the review board, and I thought they were so chock full of good information that they would benefit the council from hearing it. And then we have two agenda changes, three at this point. The first one is that Rob Pope from EPA is going to speak first because he needs to get back to Atlanta. The second one is that Michael Benjamin from Energy Solutions couldn't be here today, so DHEC is going to do their update on Susan Jenkins and David Scatura are going to do the update, but they're both DHEC speakers, so that's fine. And then the third one is that I ask on Monday, I called DOE and I said, can you do a budget update? Because I don't understand what this Cromnibus is. And so they very generously put together something. So Doug Hensey will make the first presentation on the 2015 budget. So with that, Rob Pope is going to talk about the EPA's role and about how the cleanup mission is going on the Savannah River site. This came about because last fall he was making presentations to the CAB, and I realized that we are always focused on what needs to be done at the site and how much work there's still to be done, but we actually have accomplished a lot. Not we, DOE, the regulators, EPA and DHEC, and the contractors have accomplished a lot, and I thought it would be good for us to just be reminded that we are cleaning up the site, and it couldn't be more timely. There was an article in the state this morning talking about how polluted the Savannah River site is, that there's much pollution on the Savannah River site. Much is a very subjective word, but I would argue that much of the pollution that was on the Savannah River site is now remediated or in the process of being remediated. So I'm going to turn it over to Rob, who is the CERCLA project manager for the Savannah River site. Rob.
Good afternoon. As Karen said, I'm Rob Pope. I'm with the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Our office is in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a regional office and covers the Southeast. I'm going to tell you a little bit about EPA and why we're at SRS and what has been done there in the recent past. So EPA, you know, our mission as the Environmental Protection Agency is to protect human health and the environment. We don't process nuclear material. That's not our job. It's not our job to fly planes or drive tanks or any of that stuff. This is our primary mission. It's an independent agency formed in 1970 by law, by Congress writing laws. All we do is write the regulations to implement the laws, and then we enforce those regulations. And we also set national standards. And as I'll talk about, a lot of the regulations are actually enforced by the states, where programs have been delegated to the state. South Carolina has a great majority of programs delegated to them, and they then write state regulations and enforce them. Oops. Just a quick snapshot of where we are. We are the Southeast region, so we work with all the Southeast states from Kentucky to Florida and North Carolina to Mississippi. As this region, we have kind of a challenge in that we actually have more coastline than any other region in the continental U.S. There are a couple of regions out west that cover Hawaii and Guam, and they cover Alaska, so they have a little more coastline, but we have the most continental coastline, which is really the most developed coastline. And in many respects, because it's developed, it's also the most endangered coastline. Let's see. I work in the CERCLA program, which I purposely did not write out here, but it's the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation Liability Act. You can forget that and just call it Superfund. And what that law did was, before it was enacted, the federal government really had no authority to respond to any hazardous releases. Whether it was a chemical spill or a train wreck, whatever it was, there was no real law that said the federal government could respond to those. And this law made a way that we could respond to them. At federal facilities, the law made the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy and other federal facilities like National Park Service, they are the lead agency. It's their job to clean up any messes on their property. However, they have to follow all the same procedures that anyone else would have to follow. These are laid out in what's called the National Contingency Plan, the NCP. And then EPA and the states will look at what they propose to do and will either concur with it, or if we don't think they've picked something appropriate, we'll pick another remedy to clean up the situation. And this is something a lot of people are not aware of, but the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, they have to follow the same requirements as any chemical plant, be it a Monsanto plant or be it any place where you might have a chemical spill or anything like that. So these are the statutes that we work with. CERCLA is the main one that I work with. Then many of the others are delegated actually to South Carolina DHEC, and they include the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, the Oil Pollution Control Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, which applies to all the drinking water that's supplied through municipal systems and then is also used on private wells. The Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, those are the biggies. There's lots of other smaller ones. And federal facilities have to comply with all of these, just like any private facility. We are gifted in Region 4 with three major DOE facilities, the most of any region. Savannah Riverside, of course, here in South Carolina, but we also have the Paducah Gaseous Diffusion Plant in Paducah, Kentucky, and the Oak Ridge Reservation in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Other major facilities are existing in other parts of the country, but we are lucky enough to have these three biggies. We also have a number of Department of Defense facilities. There are 34 of them that are either on the national priorities list of sites that are most important to get cleaned up, or they are BRAC facilities that have had some kind of base realignment or closure activity. The Charleston Naval Base was a big one back during the 90s and the early 2000s. It had a lot of BRAC work done. It pretty much doesn't exist anymore. A lot of that land's been put over for civilian use or commercial use. But in our region, we have 34 that we work with. There are a lot of military bases in the Southeast in general. Part of that's because of coast. The Navy loves us because we have a lot of coast. But also we have lots of nice flatlands, so the Air Force loves us, so they can put runways down. And then the South in general supports the military pretty well. So having a military base in your region is usually supported well in the Southeast. The big one in Region 4 in South Carolina that is an MPL site is the Marine Corps Recruit Depot at Parris Island. That isn't the other MPL site that's a federal facility in your state. Savannah Riverside itself was added to that list of Superfund sites that need to be cleaned up in 1989. As part of being added to that list, all federal facilities are required to negotiate and sign a federal facilities agreement. And this is a legal court document, court-recorded document, that says how the three parties, EPA, the state of South Carolina, and the Department of Energy, will clean up the site. It governs how the investigation will be done, what documents will be submitted. It lays out the roles and responsibilities of each party, and it sets out schedules and deadlines and enforceable milestones, and lays out how penalties will be assessed if they need to be for a milestone not being met. The schedules and deadlines and enforceable milestones are updated every year. They are based on the funding the Department of Energy gets and the priorities that the three parties to the FFA set up. What do we think is the most important thing to get cleaned up in the near term? What can be pushed off to the later term? And also, with Department of Energy, they have some real mission impacts to what they can get to in cleanup, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Our role is an oversight of remedial actions at Savannah Riverside with the state, and we do this through the Federal Facilities Agreement. Like I said, we make sure they follow the NCP and they follow all the guidance. We also offer some technical and procedural assistance on how to move through the program, although at this point Savannah Riverside has moved through the program a good bit and they know how to do it fairly well. There's information and guidance and training that EPA is always putting out and always updating based on new situations, new contaminants. We drop levels that things should be cleaned up to as the science gets better and we understand more and more what impacts certain chemicals may have. We drop the level of that chemical that we consider safe. And when it comes to actually picking what's going to be done to clean up the site, it's EPA and the state have to concur on that record of decision. And you've probably heard of records of decision under the NEPA program. Those are just for that program. When you do a record of decision under the CERCLA program, it becomes enforceable by all three parties, as well as parties outside the FFA. It's a little different than the NEPA program, where the records of decision are quite as stiff. Karen asked me to give a little update on what has been accomplished, and I thought that I would focus just on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that's been done at DOE sites in general in the region, but also specifically at SRS. You've probably had a presentation in the past from SRS as they closed out Recovery Act and as they were going through it, but I just wanted to touch on that again to show that there has been some real major work completed at the site. For Region 4, the DOE sites got $2.4 billion. And that was 40% of all the money that DOE got for Recovery Act, which is a pretty big chunk. Savannah Riverside got the second most in the country with $1.615 billion. The Hanford site out in Washington got more. And one way that they get more is they actually have two different operations offices out there that each get a piece of the pie. So they did get a slightly larger amount. Oak Ridge got a respectable $755 million to get some work accomplished, and Paducah, being the smallest of the three sites, only got $79 million. It's very rare that I use the term only with $79 million. So the Savannah River site scope, $1.615 billion. These numbers are kind of rounded. I'm sure folks from DOE can give you very exact numbers, but I'm just talking about how the progress has been made overall. They did over 30 building demolitions. Two reactor areas were completely addressed, P reactor and R reactor, which I'll show some pictures of, and C reactor was partially addressed, one part of the building. Over 20 non-time critical removal actions. These are short-term actions that we do in the CERCLA program, where it's a simple action, usually a dig and haul or fill something with concrete or a very quick soil treatment action, not something that's going to last long term. Those we don't usually try to do on the removal program. Over 14 operable units were accelerated by either 2 years and up to over 20 years. And I'll talk about the reactor buildings especially because, well, we were already working towards getting something done at P reactor, and Recovery Act allowed us to accelerate that and also throw R reactor and then finally C reactor into the mix as well. We really didn't think that we would get done with P reactor for many, many years, that it would take us a long time. Even though that reactor was basically abandoned and had no mission, it was just going to be really expensive and very complicated work. And Recovery Act allowed that to move forward very quickly. In addition to that, there were landfill caps and excavations. Soil vapor extraction systems were installed. We did all kinds of groundwater surface and surface water source actions, and lots of monitoring systems were installed that continue to help us today as we work through things. And then even today, even in this fiscal year, there are still a couple of records of decisions and remedial action documents that we will work through this year that are the polishing steps to the physical work that got accomplished during Recovery Act. So this is a picture of P reactor and what it looked like before. This is actually as the work was getting going. When the first time I went out to P reactor, none of this activity was certainly going on out there. It was basically looked very, very abandoned and very, very sealed up. This is as they got going. These are some actions that had to happen during. The stack had to be taken down just for stability reasons to make the building last longer. If you get rid of the stack, you don't have the problem of it falling on the building and causing an opening in the building later on. the roofs to the building had to be modified so that rainwater would go off of the roofs, making the building last longer and allowing the radioactivity inside the building to be contained for a longer period of time. Here's a picture within the disassembly basin where the rods used to sit and cool. This is a picture of the grout going in and a low-strength concrete material being put in the building to seal the sediment that was left in that basin and fill it up and partially deal with the tritiated water, the small portion that was still left in the building. And then once that was done and that was a solid mass, basically a monolith, the disassembly basins were actually torn down at both P and R. So this is an action, this is a P reactor specifically. You can see where the roofs are modified and they've all had an angle put on them so they drain rainwater off. This is where the disassembly basin was, and underneath there is one solid mass of concrete now, and then it has a cap on top of it that also allows rainwater to drain off. And then it's very difficult to see, but you can kind of see these vertical lines on the building. So those are just the marks of draining rainwater where they actually cut into the wall of the building on the roof, so it kind of looks like a medieval castle now, but and with parapets, but it allowed the rain, allows the rainwater to drain off the roof. Before, these roofs would hold water, which over time would have compromised these roofs. So, and then inside of this building, everything that's below ground surface is now one solid mass. So all radioactivity that was contained within the building below ground surface is now sealed in there. The reactor vessel itself is sealed in concrete, and then it is filled with that same concrete, and then it has a cap on it on top of there. So if the building were to collapse, so you do an due to an earthquake or something, the reactor vessel is still sealed in there. Unlike a commercial facility, these reactors were never designed to be removed from the building, and so the decision to keep them in the building and to seal them forever was made because cutting them into pieces was not really feasible. A lot of worker risk there. And then where do you send it that's going to be safer than where it is now? So the way we work at Savannah Riverside is a little different from how we work at some of our private facilities. Because there's a federal facilities agreement, we use a teamwork approach where all three parties sit down. We go through the project information, all the chemical data, all the radiological data, soil, groundwater data, and we work out together what we're going to propose to the public to do. It requires a good bit of time. It's not the simplest process, but it's much better than the old days where DOE would put together a document, they would mail it off to Columbia and mail it off to Atlanta. DHEC and EPA would look at those documents, we'd be completely disgusted with them, we'd bleed red all over those documents, write them pages and pages of comments, and send the documents back, at which point DOE would blow their heads off, and they'd try to redo the document, and then they send another version back, and we'd do the same thing, and that would go back and forth many, many times. The new way we do business, and we have been doing business like this at SRS for over a decade, is we sit down, we go through the information before it's ever put down into a final document, and we make sure we can come to agreement on how it's being presented and what we're going to do about it, or what we're going to present to the public to do about it. And then once we make that decision, that goes out to the public to get their feedback and input. Once they give us that input, we either move forward with our remedy, or we may modify it in some way, or we may choose another remedy. But it's a much more collaborative process than what was the normal regulatory regulated entity process. After we choose what we're going to do, EPA stays involved. It looks at designs, make sure it's constructed like it's supposed to be constructed, make sure it remains protective of human health and the environment. There is monitoring that is done at all of these sites once the remedy is chosen. Some of these things have long-term groundwater monitoring that we know we will be monitoring there over 100 years. And one of the unique things about CERCLA that makes it very different from the way a lot of the RAD world works is CERCLA says anytime you leave waste in place, be it at a gold mine or at a DOE facility or at a chemical plant, you will go back and make sure every 5 years that that waste is still sealed and everything is protective of human health and the environment. And that is very different from a lot of other statutes where you try to get something in a safe form and then walk away from it. That's not the way CERCLA works. They say, you get it in a safe form for now, and then you check on it every 5 years to make sure. And there's no end to this, which is something that people are starting to realize. Savannah Riverside has now done 4 5-year reviews. So they've had the remedies going for over 20 years now, and we've reviewed them 4 times. We don't see that there will ever be an end to that. So we may be doing 5-year reviews for the next 1,000 years. That's the way CERCLA is set up. And EPA, the region, looks at the site as well as the management in the region. We also send things up to headquarters in Washington to make sure that we're being consistent with decisions that are made nationwide. There is always site-specific differences between, say, us and Lawrence Livermore in California, but we still try to be consistent on how we're protecting human health and the environment. Just a quick list of all the projects that are ongoing. So a lot of good work has been done. The majority of the plumes have been addressed, or at least we've investigated them. We don't have remedies implemented for every single groundwater plume, but many of them we do have remedies implemented, and we are monitoring those remedies. But you can see there's a good bit of current work still ongoing. And there's a great deal left to do. Karen told me she really wanted me to talk about all the great work that's been done, which I agree. A lot of great work has been accomplished. It's at this point been a pleasure in my career to work with Savannah Riverside and get a lot of the great things done that we've gotten done, but there's still a lot more left to do. Of course, the high-level waste tank farms still have to be addressed. I'm sure you guys hear about those pretty regularly. One thing that a lot of people forget about is that, well, each tank has to be addressed, and South Carolina and DOE and EPA are working hard to get that done. Once each tank is addressed, the tank farm itself still has to be addressed. And we know that there are things left in the tank farm beyond the tanks that we haven't even really started talking about yet. There are lots of ash piles. Strangely enough, Savannah Riverside never worked on nuclear power. They basically buy their energy off the market, and in the early days, they made steam and some energy burning coal. So they have coal ash piles pretty much in every industrial area around the site. Several of them have been addressed and already have covers put on them, and they're in a safe, stable form. Many others have not been addressed yet. The really big one in what's called D area down near the Savannah River is being worked on now. It's one that EPA is very concerned with because it's closest to the river. It's closest to the most sensitive environment of the floodplain and the wetlands of the river. But there's a lot more to be done there. And all the reactors have not been addressed yet. Some of the reactors have ongoing missions where they store things waiting to be processed, and they have receipts bringing things in for non-proliferation reasons, and we haven't been able to get to those areas and really take an action yet or even evaluate what action we might take. So there's a lot of things still to be done. There are 2 major water bodies on site, Elk Lake and Parr Pond. We know the sediments in there have issues, have contaminants in them. We haven't got to those yet. Those contaminants are safely separated from the general public right now, but at some point in the future, they do need to be addressed. And I tried to move quickly, so I'll be happy to take any questions.
Very good job. Does Rob have, does anybody have questions for Rob? I have one. I know that the last list you showed us, those are the big, long-term, complex, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this kind of thing? But for the whole time that you have been working on this, y'all have cleaned up a lot of small chemical solvent muck and truck kind of sites. Do you have a number for how many of those we have? It doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah.
Over 400.
Yeah.
We start with 700.
515 originally, and there's over 400 done. And a lot of them were small, like you said, muck and truck sites. So they were easier to address. But a lot of them were not. I mean, every seepage basin outside of every reactor has been addressed. And those were major things to get done. Yeah, the old rad waste burial ground in the middle of the site is now capped. And that was a major issue. So, you know, that's a 76-acre cap. So big things have been done, and lots of small things have been done, but we have some good-sized things left.
Well, and so, I have to commend all of you, because when I was part of the CAB in the very early days, and we were just working out this system, and we had numerous multi-hour meetings discussing how to do this, everybody sitting in a room, I really think that was critical to getting as far along, that you've got input from everybody, all stakeholders, everybody got to talk, and that you guys were comfortable enough with working with each other that you managed to find a path forward that met everybody's needs. So I appreciate that from all of you.
Luckily, you know, I'm very, very young. I wasn't there in the very early days.
Thank you, Rob.
But
well, your predecessors did a really
good
job.
Yes, the predecessors did a great job. And actually, Brian Hennessy was there in the early days and is at DOE, and he's done a great job. So.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
Thank you.
Safe drive back to Atlanta.
Thank you all.
We'll see you. Okay. Susan and David. This is our annual update on the Barnwell Low Level Waste Disposal Facility. Unfortunately, as I said, Mike couldn't be here today, so Susan and her boss are going to do this presentation, their presentation. We won't have Barnwell. So, Susan.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Okay, so this is just an overview, an aerial view, I guess you would say, of the disposal facility. It started operating in 1971, exists of 235 acres used for both disposal and site buildings, and 120 acres have been capped, as you can see from all the green space. That is, those are the tops of the caps. I'd like to start out with the projected timeline for the operations of the site. It opened, as I said, in 1971, and it was open to all states for disposal. But on July 1st, 2008, two important things happened. One was that the site began compact-only operations, as we had entered into the Atlantic Compact Act, accepting only waste from the three states of South Carolina, Connecticut, and New Jersey. And also on that day, the site began its phase one closure activities, because the site is to be closed in two phases, as you may recall. And the first phase closes all of the areas that were used for disposal during the time when waste was accepted from all of the states. And that period is now complete. We are in the post-closure observational period, and the site is expected to end its waste disposal operations around the year 2038. Now, this is not a date that's set in stone. This is just a projected date that is part of the current closure plan, which is updated every 5 years. At that point, phase two closure activities will begin to close the remaining areas of the site. And then we will have state oversight for at least 100 years. And so, to kind of review, as I said, Atlantic Compact operations only now. Phase one closure activities are complete, and 86% of the site has been closed. So, and we're talking about acreage here. There's extensive documentation showing that the 16 performance objectives that are listed in their license have been met. And these, you know, involve things like, you know, capping the site and verifying information, verifying data, making sure trench markers are there, taking down buildings that are no longer needed, those types of things. And so I'll also give you an update on the groundwater and surface water monitoring program that we have. And before I start that, it's probably a good idea to say, for those in the room who may not be familiar with the history of the site, this is not news. The plume has been there for years, and so this is really just an update on the status of the data related to the plume. Chem Nuclear samples 178 monitoring locations. Those consist of on-site wells, off-site wells, and also creek locations, so that would be the surface water. The sampling is performed quarterly. DHEC samples at 21 of those locations, so we split those samples. And we also, and some of those offsite wells are private wells. There's 10 private wells that we sample. Those are done annually. And